I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
To the Wise Men's Ear podcast. We are here to talk about Sunderland's first win since returning to the second tier of English football and on an unbeaten run of what is 18 games now, I believe. 19, is it? I thought it was 18. Interesting, isn't it? So, also, our 800th episode tonight, which I only found out about an hour ago. So
that's why we put the number in the episode title, so we can keep track of it. But we're going to remove that soon. I think we've got it. We're going to get rid of it.
Production meeting.
We're going to have to put it somewhere, which we will, so we make sure we keep track of these milestones.
I almost feel like we should have prepared something special for it. We're delighted to say our special guest on this 800th episode is James Sutton from the Evening Chronicle. We've gone big, and we've gone bold for this one.
Nice to share your milestone with you, lads.
Yeah. James recording from a car, very David Brent. So
yes, I'm in a car park, North Yorkshire Way, Robin Hood's Bay.
Ooh, that's nice. How desperate he is to get involved. That's the passion and commitment that has seen us get to 800 episodes because. Obviously, it's with the great benefit of people like James and many others involved in the industry and ex-players, stuff like that, who give up the time and come and do it. So, you know, I think...
To be fair, if it was 799 or 801, I would have said sorry.
Ego took over.
It's a kind of attitude that's helped this podcast excel, but that's maybe pushing it a bit far.
Yeah, it's helped it
manage to exist. Maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I have to tell you, 10 years ago, we couldn't have done it. So Stephen started by trying to record outside, but the wind was blowing his mic, so it sounded terrible. James is in a car. I'm in a house. We're recording this over the internet. So it's there's been many advancements in the time. Well, I mean, one of the people who used to do the podcast, I guess not this one technically, but kind of, is now like in the dugout at Sunderland. With the current management team. Obviously, we gave Michael a leg up with that because obviously if we hadn't given him the exposure he needed, he wouldn't have had a chance. So I think credit to us.
If he hadn't have persevered with us and thought, this is really what I don't want to do with my life, if I'm ever going to follow my dreams, it's now or never. You're welcome, Michael.
He won't be listening.
What's quite ironic, actually, is because you've just mentioned now that the technology, and I was trying to stay outside. And if the sun comes back, I'm going to give it another go.
It's the wind, it's not the sun.
I know, but the wind only comes out when a cloud's over. It's fine when it's not. I've been sitting in the garden all day. I'm working from home today, and when the sun gets out, it's red hot, no wind whatsoever. When a cloud's over, there's breeze.
So I'm not having that because how can a cloud move over without breeze?
I don't know. Don't know what you want us to say. The reason we started this pod was because you couldn't have done this then. Like, the other people were having a go and the quality wasn't quite there. And it's just because I had access to the studio at the time, which is no longer needed now. But that was why we thought we'd give it a go, really, wasn't it? Because we had the studio access and could bring you a sound quality that wasn't really available.
Listening back to some of those earlier ones, earlier the sound quality was not that great, so that's probably on me. So sorry about that.
Yeah. Oh, those were the days, weren't they?
There you go. It's all right, yeah, but you know, still,
well,
it's still gone,
and it was just something different, you know. I think Rock Report were having a good go at the time, despite Chris Weatherspoon being one of the regular guests, but you know, they would be first to say the audio quality wasn't there then, and then they came on board with what we did after that. And we obviously had access to the Sunderland manager at the time, Martin O'Neill, and I'd started to meet people like James on the circuit, so we could start getting good quality guests in. So the rest is history. There you go.
Yeah.
That's a very, very...
more on that, isn't it? But they,
you know.
Switching off in the droves.
No, switching on in the droves when you look at how many people listened to that first one.
Yeah.
That was probably me listening over and over again.
Yeah.
Press and play. Because SoundCloud's brutal for just exposing that kind of thing. It's like, you know, everybody can see how many people's listening to this now. So if you're going to go for it, you've got to back yourself. And despite that, we carried on. Despite those numbers for the first one, we carried on. And Sunderland have marked it with a win. There you go. I'm just distracted. Keep my eye on that sun. It's coming out.
That's
you got a kind of lager there, Gareth.
I have, yeah.
See, this is what I wanted. It was nice this afternoon. I thought, I'm going to sit and mark the 800 episode outside and have a can, but I've actually got no alcohol in. I considered going to get some on my break. But I walking in my work polo shirt, like carrying cans during the day. I just thought, no, this is a good look.
You'd have been all right.
And I probably, you know, it's nobody else's business, but still, I just thought I'll just have to wait. So a cup of tea it is for me. Sunderland themed mug.
Lovely.
Like it.
Well, I would never, yeah, it's a, do you find that, Gareth, James, maybe different for you, James, because the nature of your job. But do you find, Gareth, like office secret Santas, people buy you Sunderland stuff?
Sunderland mug.
Yeah, Sunderland. I get a different reincarnation of Sunderland mug every Christmas off somebody in the secret Santa. Which would get ironically, I would never buy that myself, but I don't mind it.
If you're listening, then you get.
They won't be listening. Yeah, they won't be.
Just get them a voucher.
I work with mainly females who have no interest in football. They won't be listening. Definitely not. Right, James, why are you in your car? Just like why are you? Are you? I know you've said you're on a trip, but have you got company there?
No.
You made your excuses and left.
I've made my sinister excuses. Left my company alone for half an hour while I come and done this with you guys. I'm sitting here in the car, so I've got a little bit of peace and quiet. No wind. It's lovely.
Probably wanting us to get a move on.
Yeah, so. I was thinking he's probably not the only one, is he?
if you hear somebody drumming the fingers on the roof of the car, you'll know that my company has returned and wants me to get on.
Yeah. Well, we'll make a start then. We knew going in this match, Bristol City could be a little bit dodgy at the back. Firstly, before we get in, drill down into the game, I think just the team selection for me was interesting when I saw it. Doesn't this look like a really nice, even before the game started, what looked like a really nice, balanced team on paper, managing to get Dan Neil into it, Pritchard and two centre-forwards. That was the big take from the team selection, wasn't it?
Well, as you well know, Stephen, I've always been a fan of three at the back.
Yeah, we've been playing three at the back, just not too front.
Because it gives you, I always say, if you play with a back three, it gives you the opportunity to pick the most aggressive team you can, and it gives you balance as well. I would say we're very aggressive in our back three, given we've essentially got a fullback in it, and we've basically got a winger playing on both sides. So, in as your wing backs. And yeah, I think, you know, that's the positive thing. I think that's been a massive, massive like tick in Alex Neil's box when he's like, the way he selects his sides. And we very rarely look like a team who's, you know, setting up to stay in a game or, you know, picking a defensive sort of option. We always look like a team who wants to impose themselves on the game and find ways to win the game. And that was no different. Like, really, obviously, really pleased to see Sims start. And as it transpired, it was a very, very fruitful selection.
Interesting selection, James, wasn't it? Because we were talking after the Coventry game last week, questioning why, when the players, Ross Stewart in particular, absolutely knackered at the end of that game and dead on the feet almost, and we were questioning why Sims wasn't just thrown on there just to add some fresh legs and just to give us a new focal point up front and take the pressure off us a little bit. And then we've all kind of jumped to the conclusion, well, he's obviously just way off the pace, but way off the pace he wasn't when he started on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, I think Alex Neil likes to mix things up a little bit. I mean, Coventry started with a back three last week, but Alex Neil decided to start with a back four. This time, down at Bristol City, they started with a three and Sunderland matched them up. You know, it's sometimes it can be quite hard to read. Sometimes he deliberately matches teams up. Sometimes he deliberately goes the opposite way. I think if you're going to play with a back three, then you really need two strikers. So possibly he took the view last week against Coventry that Ellis Sims wasn't ready to start that game, having only come in a couple of days beforehand. But with a full week of training at Sunderland under his belt, then he was okay to start. I mean, you know, he tired later on in the game, but he was going to because he'd run himself into the ground by then. But as Gareth rightly says, you know, it worked out really well, and he looked sharp right from the off. You know. In fact, the pair of them did, him and Ross Stewart, obviously putting Bristol City under pressure in only the, sort of, what was it, fourth or fifth minute, and Stewart winning the ball and Ellis Sims, you know, snaffling up and making the most out of that chance. And that really put Bristol City on the back foot, and particularly for a team like Bristol City that have had, you know, one of the poorer home records in recent times in the Championship. You know, that really built the pressure on them early. You know, and that was it worked a treat from Sunderland's point of view.
I think, you know, you look at Stewart and Sims, and they're absolutely, you know, going to cause better centre halves than the ones who were faced in the weekend a lot of problems. I think you've got that really good combination in the way they operate, and I think they're, you know, they're both fast in different ways. I think sort of it's almost like, you know, Ross Stewart's like the, as he used to say about Michael Holding, the West Indies fastball, the whispering death, because he used to like arrive at the crease like silently. And that's what it's a bit like with Ross Stewart. He's not like got that acceleration. It's just more this just sustained pace over a distance. And he just gets, like, the amount of times he gets in for, as we saw, I mean, the playoff semi-final, did it nick the ball away, didn't he, and scored in the first leg? How many times you see him run a ball down the line and the defender looks favourite and then Stewart comes away with it? It's just that it's very difficult to stop. And then you look at Sims, his pace, his acceleration is, you know, that it was very, and I think it was reflected on the comms. I think Lee Howie made a comment that I think that probably a lot of Sunderland fans who were watching the game probably did the same, where there was a ball just knocked into it towards the edge of the box, and I think Sims, the defender, about 10 yards on Sims, and Sims got the ball comfortably, and it was like, wow, he's fast. And when's the last time we had an explosively quick centre forward? And so maybe I was trying to think and mention that it was probably maybe Cissé. It's probably similar in his pace, where he was just very sort of explosively quick. I can't really think of anyone since then. And I think if you ask any fan the kind of player that they want, or list an attribute that they want, that would by reckon be in the top two or three. You know, physicality, athleticism, pace, probably. If you've got a player with those things, you know, I think, yeah, and they've got a bit of ability, then you're in business, I think. And I think it's got a lot to be excited about with those two.
As basic as this analysis sounds, it was just really good that they both got on the score sheet, James, as well, because it's good for any centre forward to score on the debut, obviously, for obvious reasons, because, you know, it's a massive confidence thing for footballers, and we've seen it with people over the years, like Vaughan and Alidor, when the longer it goes on and on and on, when the goals don't start coming, the more players of the mind. So a brace for him was great, but also for Stewart as well. just to remind everybody he's still here as well, because he's the new guy is coming to partner him, and he'll be aware that, you know, they're probably not going to play up front together every game. There will be games where it's going to be one or the other. And Stuart needs to let people know he's still around as well. So he'll feel great to get off a mark. If not, because there's always a question mark when any player like that steps up a level as well. And this is the highest level he's been at now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for the reasons that you just said, obviously, Ellis Sims comes to Sunderland. You come in, you're a new player, you're at a new club. I think it's fair to say that, that fans wouldn't have known too much about Ellis Sims before he arrived here. And what you don't want is to go 5, 10, you know, a dozen games without a goal. You want to, you know, get up and running straight away, and that's exactly what he's done. Well, you know, inside 5 minutes, you know, it doesn't come much better than that. You know, we've seen strikers at Sunderland in the past that have taken a long, long time to get off the mark, and you can visibly see the weight of the, you know, or the burden get heavier and heavier for them week by week, as the games tick by and they don't get a goal. Ross Stewart, similar but in a different way. And, you know, we know he scored 26 goals last year in League One, which was a brilliant season from his point of view. But he is at a higher level now. And again, you don't want to go five championship games, 10 championship games without a goal. He scored in his second appearance at this level, proved that he can get goals at this level. I'm hoping that'll be the first of many. But he's up and running, and to have your two strikers scoring goals at this early stage is, you know, will have been just what Alex Neil wanted. You know, you don't want to go through that point where people start to question and start to doubt, and is so and so good enough? Can they make it at this level? Blah blah blah. You know, they're both up and running, and that's great to see.
It keeps the wall from the door a little bit, doesn't it? When it comes to discussions about, obviously the squad is under strength. The under strength squad that we do have. And it does keep those discussions away, doesn't it, a little bit? If you're getting results, people start talking about it in a different way, don't they? They're going like, oh, well, we know we need another striker. Yeah. Because what if one of these gets injured and, like, or, you know, one of them's not doing it? Or, you know, if you start the season with negative results, people will be going, well, we're short and, like, we need to get these players in as soon as possible. Now the conversation's more, we know we're going to strengthen or hopefully strengthen or bring new players in.
Yeah.
Isn't it great that we're playing the way we are playing and these players are going to come in and challenge and bolster the squad? So I think that's like a real, in terms of like a sort of psyche of like a supporter, is probably a real positive thing, because it thinks, it makes you feel like, well, if this is what we can do with this group, add a bit of quality to it, what, you know, maybe we're looking more towards mid-table realistically. Yeah.
It's very much like the start of last season, if you think about it, where Sunderland went into the season with a squad that was still very much a work in progress. I think, am I right in saying that there were no specialist fullbacks when the season kicked off?
Dan Neil started left back, didn't he? Dan Neil played left back in the first game.
So you know, the squad was partially formed now. You go into the season, and what you can't afford to do is allow teams to get a head start on you. Sunderland are like that this season. I think, what is the 7 championship games between the beginning of the season and the end of the transfer window? Well, I think last year it was slightly less because they started later. I think it was might have been 4 or 5 games by the end of August. And Sunderland had an excellent start. I think they lost the one game, didn't they, at Burton in that opening month. They had a very good start, despite the fact that the squad was still being built, and it feels like that this time round. And given that Sunderland are in a higher division this time, you know, that's working well for Sunderland. You don't want to be struggling in this opening month. They couldn't afford to give teams a head start on them this season, when, you know, there's going to be tough challenges ahead. There are going to be bumps in the road, any more than they could afford it last year when they had a promotion campaign to, you know, to concern themselves with.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. And when, I mean, the first half and second half performances will be very different, because you've got to give Sunderland credit for the way I think responded in particular to going behind so early in the second half, because what I can gather, people were fearing the worst by then. You know, we scored a goal, we didn't hold the lead for very long at all. And then we've considering we tired so much against Coventry in the first game and ended that game on the back foot, but you know, almost like out of ideas and out of energy and stuff. It didn't bode well for Bristol City getting an early goal in the second half in front of what was their highest crowd in 40 years, I believe. I was hearing or reading yesterday somewhere. So Sunderland have done really well, haven't they? In terms of just character, you know, before tactics and systems and all that stuff, character to get back into the game and turn it around.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you look at the season really as a series of challenges. Really, first win, first point, first clean sheet, first goal, etc., etc. Well, this was a challenge in itself. It was the first time they'd been behind since you know, they've been back in the Championship. How will they respond to that? How they responded to it was to equalise within 2 minutes and get themselves back in the game and go on to turn it round and win. You know, that's for what that does for a team's mentality and for their morale. I mean, you know, you can't overstate how important that is. That's, you know, that's massive to see from the team's belief point of view, for them to do that and to show that, okay, you get a setback, but you know, you come back into it and you come out on top. I mean, that was a real box tick from my point of view.
I guess it's a continuation, though, isn't it? When, you know, of those difficult moments under Alex Neil last year, you know, generally we came through them. I mean, but I say generally, the exception would be, you know, a few of the draws we had against some of the lower ranked teams in League One at times. And, you know, I think we drew 0-0 at Lincoln and things like that. And obviously laboured against some teams like Shrewsbury, but we came through, we kept knocking on the door and scored the late goals in those games that we needed to. I mean, that challenge has been presented to the players, I would say, sort of 8 out of 10 times you come through it. And it was you could argue there was a test of a different nature against Coventry where, you know, there was clearly an issue in how we were trying to defend in that game, but you can't fault the desire to defend that was there. And at the weekend, it was more like last season, I would say, because generally in the last 4 years, we haven't come under like sustained spells of pressure in games, really, have we? At the weekend, it was very much like last season, where it was like, right, well, we've gone behind or we're levelling the game. How are we going to win the game from here? And they don't go into the shell and think, oh, like Stephen's saying early in the second half, you know, a lot of teams would have gone, like newly promoted teams probably buckled a bit and maybe conceded again, where we actually, it was like, right, we're going to get control of the game now. And we absolutely, as soon as they scored, it was just complete, we had complete control of the game. It was just all Sunderland. They barely really had an attempt after that. I can't really recall any sort of sustained pressure from them. It was just
a little bit nervy towards the end, a little bit.
Maybe, but
forcing some half chances and stuff.
I wouldn't say we were really, you know, passing barely had a save to make. It was just, you know, it was more of what we've seen last season against better teams and better players. And that it's got to be, you know, I'm surprised at the positive balance in the games that we've had. I thought we would have struggled a little bit more, and I think that's a testament to the manager and then the players, really, isn't it? Because you know they're so well organised, really, aren't they? And I think that's probably what gives them that little bit extra few percentage points in the game. Where if you're not organised, you can easily get run ragged. But you know we just seem to know how to compete.
Yeah. I mean, Alex Neil's a very astute reader of the game, isn't he? And he, you know, that's immediately apparent as soon as you speak to him. He sees what other managers are doing and he already has a plan in his mind of how you counteract that or what you do to to guard against the strengths of the other team. To be fair, you know, you saw that a little bit against Coventry. Coventry were on the back foot in that first half against Sunderland. Mark Robbins made changes to get Coventry back into the game. So you are going to see that from opposition as well. But Alex Neil is definitely one of the most astute readers of a game that I can remember at Sunderland in quite a while. And you know, fans have often said about managers having a plan B. Well, it always seems that Alex Neil's got a plan B and a C and a D and an E. You know, he's got various different variations depending on what another team does, and that can be invaluable, particularly in tight games, and particularly in games which Sunderland are going to have this year. Because I mean, despite the fact Sunderland got 4 points in two games, and that's been, you know, an excellent start, there are going to be tough challenges ahead, and there are going to be bumps in the road, and you know, it's not all going to go as well as the first two games have gone. So to have those sort of options and variations, if you like, is going to be invaluable over the course of the season.
Yeah. Well, we're going to hear now from Richard Forrester from Bristol Live. Just a couple of minutes from Richard to see how he saw the game through the eyes of a Bristol City reporter.
Another game and another defeat for Bristol City, and I don't think they can really have too many complaints about the result this time. My pretty much prediction where it was going to be tight and to need a bit of magic to be the difference of the teams obviously went out completely out the window after 4 minutes. And at the end of the day, I think the game just came down to which attackers could make the most of the defensive errors on show, and I thought, well, obviously Sunderland did that the better, and I thought the two strikers, Sims and Ross Stewart, were a right handful to play against. I think they ran City's defence ragged, really, and it was quite an eye-opener for, I think, the home fans to see that the defensive frailties of last season are still there. But I thought those two for Sunderland were really good, and so they can build a great partnership going forward. And I think from, obviously it's only one game that I've seen of Sunderland, but the evidence on that game, then I'm sure they'll be fine this season, especially if those two can stay fit. But I was also quite impressed with Pritchard as well in midfield. He played that great pass into Sims for the second goal, and he made no mistake coming in inside the box. But I don't think the Bristol City fans are too happy at the full-time whistle, but I think now the dust has settled, they can pick out some of the positives from the game, the fact that they created enough chances. They just weren't clinical enough, really. But again, it's the same kind of topic of conversation that Nigel Pearson was on about in the last season, where just you need to score three or more goals to just seemingly get a point out of the game, and it proved to show that was the same again on Saturday. But I think overall it was probably a fair result, and Dan Bentley made two really good saves, a brilliant one in the second half as well, although where we could have done better for the second goal is debatable. But yeah, no real complaints, I don't think, from a Bristol City perspective, and congratulations to Alex Neil, and I think he got his tactics spot on by trying to attack that space behind to the wing backs with Bristol City pushed forward. So yeah, congratulations and good luck for the rest of the season.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Okay, thanks to Richard there. Right, any more shout outs for any of our players? I feel like we should be giving them some praise, shouldn't we? For a
we should. I agree, Stephen.
Come on, then, give me some shout outs.
I want to give a double thumbs up for Jack Clark. I think in both games, he's been absolutely brilliant and exceeded. I know he's a bit of a Marmite player last season. It seems some people weren't quite sure about him. But I thought, for somebody playing it, left wing back, who's definitely more of an attacking player, I think is, he might not go flying into challenges or whatever, but his work rate's brilliant, and he's definitely been more of a, he's mixed it up a little bit more. Second half, he seemed to go more outside instead of trying to cut back in all the time. I think he should do that more because he definitely gets more more end product, more positive end product when he goes down the outside of the defenders and stuff like that. But I think he's been terrific. And I think Corey Evans as well, after a bit of a shaky start in the first game, I thought he was very good at the weekend. So there you go. There's my two.
Yeah, I agree with you. Jack Clark was excellent. I thought he got better as the game went on, really caused Bristol problems, particularly in the second half. Corey Evans, I thought, was excellent as well. He's another of those players that I think some fans sometimes wonder about his value to the team. But I think if you look at what he does off the ball, not just what he does on the ball, the positions he takes up, and the way that he plays with his head a lot of the time, I think that's really crucial to the team. And it's one of those things where he doesn't do the flashy things. He doesn't catch the eye when he's on the ball, perhaps, in the same way that, say, an Alex Pritchard does. But it's the quiet work, the stuff that goes on in the background that you have to keep an eye on. And I thought he was really good. And Alex Pritchard as well as the other one, naturally, who, as I say, does the other side of the game. He was excellent on the ball, putting some really incisive passes. It was his cross for Ross Stewart's goal. I thought he was excellent, but the one problem with Alex Pritchard is because his standards are so high, sometimes it's easy to take that for granted.
I think with Pritchard, he had a bit of a he played that ball for the second goal, which was great, but it seemed to liven him up, didn't it? That the error that he made for their goal, it was almost that switched him on in from more of an attacking perspective, and after that he was really excellent, and obviously got the two assists.
Yeah.
Richard's going to come in for some recognition this year. I mean, he got man of the match from the Sky Studio in our first game last week. Richard from Bristol Lives, his name, checked him there. He's done it at this level before, as we know, went for big money before. You definitely feel like he's going to be one who's going to attract possible attention. We'll not go there. It's really early days. Let's not freak ourselves out. And Corey Evans is interesting because we did criticise him after last week's performance, so we're not being, revisionist on that. So it was good to see him put a good performance in, because I still think there's a big question mark over the step up that he'll have to make this season. So that was good.
I think Sergen has sort of settled in quite nicely as well. I mean, that was his first full season last year, and he had a couple of nasty injuries as well. He had a bad concussion, didn't he? Bad head injury, and he had some muscle injuries. I think he's another one who goes under the radar a little bit in terms of his. He just gets on with the job, doesn't he? Really?
Yeah. Well, he never. I can't. It's very rare after a game when you listen to a reaction pod or you're just talking amongst yourselves or whoever you go to the match with. It's very rare that Sergen comes under any sort of criticism, really, which just kind of sums up. Because again, it doesn't go the other way. You don't come out thinking, wow, Sergen was excellent there. Yeah. But as a player, where he is in his career development, I don't think that's a bad thing, as you say. It just means he's just doing a competent job. Yeah. he'd be happy with that, I bet, at the moment. Let himself grow into it. We'll go away, have a little break, come back, spend another 10 minutes or so just chatting about where Sunderland go from here, have expectations for the season changed, and we'll maybe brush over the League Cup fixture midweek. Welcome back to the Wise Men's Here podcast. Right, okay. 4 points, two games. Don't want to be that guy. But when Sunderland were in this division last, they also had 4 points from the first two games. They played at home to Derby. Should have won that game. Live on Sky. Didn't. Drew it. They then went to Norwich, away from home, who got promoted, I believe, that season. And won very convincingly. And the new striker, James Vaughan, scored. And everybody was happy about that.
They did get promoted, did they?
Did they not? I thought they did.
No. I don't think James Vaughan scored either.
Did he not? That's just...
Lewis Graven.
800 shows in.
Yeah.
Factually as incorrect as ever.
At Carriage Road, as you once called it.
I didn't know. It was just the way it sounded.
I'm not having that. I don't want to get into that now. I'll do it later. But,
I think you're actually going back to season one with that.
I think it's season two, I think. But, it was...
Did Vaughan score against Derby then? He scored an early goal.
No, Graben scored in that game as well.
Vaughan scored an early goal and then he didn't score against Burton away.
Oh, did he?
Mm. We'll have a look in a bit. We'll fact check in a bit.
I thought he scored one.
And goal. I don't think... No, because if you remember, the club congratulated on him scoring his first goal.
Oh, yeah, his first goal.
And then he replied to the tweet saying it's my second goal, actually. Because it had been that long since he scored his first one. I'm going to fact check this.
Maybe he did.
I think he scored a header from across. Anyway.
No, he did. You're right. Actually, no, he did. I remember now. Yeah, he did. Yeah. It was in the second half. And then McGeady scored that good goal.
So there you go. So a new striker scores. It was new striker scores away from home early in his career. And Sunderland, they're going to be all right in the Championship. We know what happened then. Look, I know that's not going to happen again. It's a very different... place. I think the very different surroundings to where we were then. But it is, James, just a reminder. I don't want to stop people from getting carried away, but it is just it's a reminder, isn't it, that it's really early days.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Stephen, you've got the relegation alarm bells ringing in Goldsmith Towers. 4 points after two games is clearly relegation.
Yeah. Form. It's triggered. It's triggered a memory. It's triggered trauma.
I thought we'd the first two results were the same, but it was 3-1 at Norwich, not 3-2.
Yeah, 3-1.
Yeah. I think the time to worry is if you don't win another game until Halloween. You know, until after Halloween.
Yeah.
If Alex Neil gets sacked on Halloween, then it will be too close for comfort. No, okay. So the record's identical near enough identical after two games, but there's a completely different feel about this squad. This is a squad that's stepping up and has something to prove, rather than a squad that looked thrown together right from the off and looked like didn't want to be in the Championship, didn't want to be at the club, to be honest with you. Quite a few of those players. Will not be much mourned, quite a few of them. This feels completely different. This is a squad that's largely comprised of the promotion winners from last season. So I think that there's lots to be optimistic about, lots to look forward to. As I've said, my note of caution is not that they've got the same points tally after two games as they did when they got relegated. My only note of caution is that there are going to be bumps along the way this season. You know, there are going to be tough times. There are going to be runs of games where Sunderland, you know, go without a win or even, you know, lose two, three, maybe even four games in a row. And the point will be people to hold the nerve at that point and accept that, this transition to our higher level is going to come with some, you know, kinks in the path. And just to stick with it, it's going to be a case of holding the nerve. I think Gareth was talking about reappraising expectations to possibly mid table. I mean, cool. I think I'll be delighted with that. Snap your hand off for mid table right away. I think you know, I don't want to say that Sunderland's goal this season is avoiding relegation. I don't want to be the person that sets the bar that low, but of course that has to be the first hurdle that you clear, but it's not the extent of Sunderland's ambitions for the season. You know, the first thing is, yeah, don't get sucked back into the League One abyss next season, but that's not the limit of the expectation. That's the floor. Then you can look further up, and I'd love to be coming on at the end of the season and reflecting on a mid-table finish, or you know, even mid-table to you know, I don't know what, 16, 15, somewhere there. I'll take that as a.
There's not usually a lot, is there, between like sort of 11th and 18th in that division. It always seems to be quite a large chunk of teams separated by not a lot. You mentioned League One there, getting sucked back into that. Did anybody else look at Derby lose at the weekend and think, thank God?
Wigan got stuffed.
Thank God. I know, but you know.
Well, I had the highlights on. I was like.
It's the Derby though, isn't it? The fact they've gone down there, skipping along the road like we do. Oh, this is going to be nice. This is going to be really nice. You know, 30,000 turned up for the first game they had at home there. And they're like, it's going to be a nice little refreshing break this, and we're going to win, and we're going to go to new grounds and travel to new places and win most of the games and go up. And then I saw them lose and I thought, yeah.
So I was watching the highlights, and when the League One ones came on, it was like just a relief. It was like not being in that league anymore. So like it's so stark. The difference between the Championship and League One in many respects is huge. You know, it does feel like a little bit of like a weight, like a sort of barren wasteland League One in comparison to the Championship, doesn't it? When you're talking about the attendances and stuff like that game at the weekend, and you know, it's nice to be going to, you know, proper stadiums again and playing clubs are more used to.
Nice to see we're still a big draw, though, even at this level. You know, the fact that we've had such a high attendance, that was good. And we are still a big draw. But I think, you know, James, we discussed again last week after the show, and Gareth mentioned earlier there that a win keeps the wolf from the door. But we were saying, and Alex Neil, more importantly, was saying, after the Coventry game, I need to bring 4 or 5 players in. We've had another game pass by since, and there's not a lot happening, is there, that we know about anyway?
No, I think that there are things going on in the background. Some long running targets that Sunderland are after. Of course, like any manager, you've got that tension, haven't you, between you know, a head coach that wants his squad in place as quickly as possible to give him the maximum amount of time to work with them. And then you've got the people that have to think about the budgets. You know, Christian Speakman in Sunderland's case, who are trying to get the players that you want at the best possible price. So you've always got that tension, and it's a bit sort of, when you're dealing with other clubs, it's a case of who blinks first, isn't it? I think the fact that Sunderland have got 4 points on the board after 2 games means that it's not panic stations. I think if your first 2 games go past and you've not got a point, then you know you're the one that's likely to blink first. You're going to think, crikey, I need these players in, and I need them right away, and I'll have to pay whatever premium is there. I think if you're getting results, then it buys you some time, doesn't it? You know, in the most literal sense, it buys you some time to get those players in. You're getting results while you're waiting. But yeah, of course, the sooner those players arrive, the better. Because I think, you know, we can all see that this squad is, you know, under strength and in some key areas. And certainly until Ellis Sims arrived, I would argue that it was weaker going into the season than it was at the end of last season. I'm not so sure I would agree with that now. It's probably pretty much on a par quality wise, but certainly numbers wise, it's still under strength.
And you need to make sure, don't you, again, something that's you know, this is not a new take or a hot take by any stretch of the imagination, but because you're stepping up, you've just mentioned there, we're probably happy with the, you know, what the the squad is in terms of the first 13, 14 players, and it gets a bit weaker after that. So you need to make sure that the players who come in, if possible, are an improvement to what we have. That's a thing. It's no good just fleshing out a squad.
Yeah. For the sake of it. And don't forget, obviously, this week, Sunderland have got a Carabao Cup game down at Sheffield Wednesday. And under normal circumstances, you'd probably want to make, you know, quite a few changes. But there aren't that many changes that that Neil can make without, you know, really bringing in youngsters to pad things out. There's a few. I mean, there are people like Carl Winchester and Jay Matete that haven't had a game in the league. I'd be amazed if they're not starting down there. But still, you know, you've got Ellis Sims and you've got Ross Stewart as your strikers. You know, in an ideal world, you wouldn't want to play either of them. Never mind both of them, would you? In a cup game at this stage, because you don't want to risk any injuries.
Elise, is it pronounced Elise here or Elise?
Alessi.
Find out tomorrow, won't we?
We'll just take the word of whoever. We'll take the word of however the commentator pronounces it. So he's going to start again. You would imagine needs minutes. So it would be interesting to see why he plays these guys. Carl Winchester, you've just said that. You know, it'd be interesting to see why he plays. Is he right back now? In the eyes of Alex Neil.
I think Alex Neil certainly sees him as a defender now. I think he sees him as either a right back or a right sided centre back. Three.
I don't know. That was never convincing to me last season. That
they're the two positions that you know.
The right back was okay. He was all right. The right back. It was the centre half experiment I didn't like.
Yeah. Well, they're the two positions that he sees him or says that he sees him in now, not as a right sided centre half in a back four, but as a right sided centre half in a back three. So, you know, again, a lot depends on what shape he plays against Sheffield Wednesday, doesn't it? I mean, obviously, Bailey Wright's not had a kick this season yet, so he's another one that could come in.
Mm. Yeah, that's interesting because some of these players they were big part of our team last year. Because I was just thinking, now God knows what kind of player is going to have to play. But there's quite a few you mentioned there. It'd be interesting to see what he does with people like Embleton as well, obviously played the start of the first game, not the second. Yeah. Does, you know, it's still early enough in the season. He's young. You know, I wouldn't be surprised to see him start as well. You know, there's a chance for you to go and express yourself and stamp your authority on the game. So it'll be interesting on that aspect. But nobody really cares about this game on Wednesday, do they? None of us? Do anybody care?
I think it's, you know, don't not care, but
you never want to see us lose. I'm not going to be happy to see. I'm never going to be that person who says, "Oh, I just want us to lose." Like I will watch the game, and I will want us to win, and I will get annoyed if we don't win. But
I wish it was a league game. Like, you know what I mean? It's
because we've just won over the weekend. Yeah,
you want the league games, don't you? I guess we'll have a fair
keep the momentum going, don't you? That's what you want.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. So, anybody else got anything to add then before we wrap it up and we'll let Tom and Matt reflect on whatever happens against Sheffield Wednesday a little bit and before they go on to the weekend's game? Anybody else? Anything else pressing?
No.
Happy? James, you happy to go back to your company now? I think he's frozen.
He's
that was good timing then, wasn't it?
Yeah, he's
gone. Literally just he didn't even wait for us to say goodbye or thank him. He's just like, right, he's wrapping the show up now.
He's being attacked by a fox
I'm off. Well, it was good timing then. So maybe James had like really, really hot take to add there when I've asked you if you want to add anything, and we're never gonna know.
Next time we'll find out.
We will. So thanks for listening as always, and as I've said, you know, thanks for putting up with us for 800 episodes. So we'll see you next time.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.